He needed to find a place to hide until sundown, whereupon he would venture, under the cover of darkness, to the rearmost bedroom on the ground floor of the Crown Hotel. There was no one in Hokitika Ah Suk trusted enough to ask for aid. Certainly not Anna, not anymore, nor Mannering, nor Pritchard. He was not on speaking terms with any of the other men from the council at the Crown, except Ah Kui, who of course would be in Kanyere digging the ground. For a moment he considered taking a room at one of the more disreputable hotels on the eastern side of town, perhaps even paying for the week in advance to disguise his motivation. But even there he could not guarantee anonymity. He could not guarantee that the proprietors would not talk. His presence in Hokitika on a Monday morning was conspicuous enough, even without wagging tongues. Better not to trust in the discretion of other men, he thought. He resolved instead to take his pistol into the alley that ran in parallel between Revel Street and Tancred Street. The alley formed a rutted thoroughfare between the rear allotments of the Revel Street warehouses and hotels, which faced west, and the rear allotments of the Tancred Street cabins, which faced east. There was ample opportunity for camouflage, and the alley was central enough to allow points of entry and exit from all sides. Best of all, the space was frequented only intermittently by the tradesmen and penny postmen who serviced the hotels. In the allotment behind a wine and spirit merchant's, Ah Suk found a place to hide. A piece of corrugated iron had been propped against an outhouse, creating a kind of lean-to, open at both ends. It was shielded from the alley by a large flax bush, and from the rear of the merchant warehouse by the outhouse pump. Ah Suk crawled into the triangular space, and sat down cross-legged. He was still sitting in this way 3 hours later, when Mr. Everard came running down Revel Street, shouting the news to the bellman that George Shepherd had taken out a warrant for a Chinaman's arrest. At Mr. Everard's words, a thrill ran through Ah Suk's body. Now he could be certain that Francis Carver had been forewarned. But Ah Suk had an advantage Carver did not, could not, suspect. Thanks to Walter Moody's confidence, he knew exactly where to find Carver and when. Warrant or no warrant, George Shepherd had not arrested him yet. Ah Suk listened until the cry up and down Revel Street had faded, and then, smiling slightly, he closed his eyes. "What are you doing down there?" Ah Suk started. Standing over him, his hand on the outhouse door, was a dirty youth of perhaps 25, wearing a sack coat and a collarless shirt. "You're not allowed to squat here, you know," the youth said, frowning. "This is private land. It belongs to Mr. Chesney. You can't just hole up where you please." Another voice from the warehouse. "Who's that you're talking to, Ed?" "There's a chink just sitting here, beside the outhouse." "A what?" "A Chinaman." "He's using the outhouse." "No," called the youth. "He's just sitting beside it." "Well, tell him to get a move on." "Get on with you," said the youth, giving Ah Suk a gentle nudge with the toe of his boot. "Get on with you. You can't stay here." The voice from the warehouse called again. "What did you say he was doing there, Ed?" "Nothing," the youth called back. "Just sitting. He's got a pistol." "A what?" "He's got a pistol, I said. What's he doing with it?" "Nothing. He's not making any trouble as far as I can see." The pause, then. "Is he gone?" "Get on with you," Ed said again to Ah Suk, motioning. "Go on!" Roused to motion at last, Ah Suk slipped out from beneath the corrugated iron and hurried away, feeling the puzzled eyes of the youth on his back as he did so. He ducked behind a laundry line and into the oaty-smelling stables at the rear of the Hotel Imperial, keeping his head down and his pistol clasped tight to his chest. Above the wickering and stamping of the horses, he could hear that the two men were still calling back and forth, discussing him. He knew that before long he would be pursued. He needed to hide himself, and quickly, before someone sounded the alarm. Ah Suk ran to the end of the stalls and peered over the half-door. He looked along the row of allotments, at the lean-to kitchens beyond them, the baize doors for the tradesmen, the privies, the pits for waste. Where would he be safest? His gaze came to rest upon the small cluster of buildings that formed the police camp, and among them the wooden cottage in which George Shepherd lived. His heart gave a sudden lurch. Well, why not, he thought, suddenly bold. It is the last place in Hokitika that anyone would think to find me. He crossed the small track between the stables and the police camp fence, walked up to George Shepherd's kitchen door, and rapped smartly upon it. While he was waiting for a response, he looked furtively about him, but the alley was quite empty, and there was nobody in the yards on either side of where he stood. Unless someone was watching him from inside one of the hotels, which was very possible, the cockled glass shielding all view of the interior, then nobody could see him, standing in the shadow of George Shepherd's lean-to, pistol in hand.
"Who is it?"
came a woman's voice through the door.
"Who is it?"
"For Margaret,"
said Suk Yong Sheng, leaning his mouth close to the wood.
"Who?"
"For Margaret Shepherd."
"But who is it? Who's calling?"
It seemed to him that her mouth was very close to the wood also. Perhaps she was leaning close on the other side.
"Suk Yong Sheng,"
he said. And then into the ensuing silence,
"Please."
The door opened, and there she was.
"Margaret,"
said Ah Suk, full of feeling. He bowed. Only when he rose from the bow did he allow himself to appraise her. Like Lydia Wells, she too seemed virtually unaltered since the scene of their last encounter at the courthouse in Sydney, when she stepped forward with the testimony, the false testimony, that had saved his life. Her hair now showed a strip of silver down the central part, and it had turned brittle, such that the few wisps that had escaped her hairnet formed a haze about her head. Apart from this small token of her advancing age, her features seemed more or less the same. The same frightened, watery eyes, the same buck teeth, the same broken nose broad across the bridge, the same blurred lips, the same look of fearful shock and apprehension. How well the memory is stirred by the sight of a familiar face! All in a rush, Ah Suk could see her sitting down in the witness chair, folding her gloved hands neatly in her lap, blinking at the prosecutor, coughing twice into a scrap of lawn, tucking it into the cuff of her dress, folding her hands again, telling a lie to save his life. She was staring at him. Then she hissed,
"What on earth?"
and gave a laugh that was almost a hiccup.
"Mr. Suk, what on earth? There is a warrant out for your arrest. Did you know that? George has taken out a warrant."
"May I come in?"
said Ah Suk. He was holding the pistol against his hip, with his body half turned to shield it. She had not seen it yet. A gust of wind blew through the open doors,